The following programming is sponsored by Clean and Sober Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
If you need immediate help, please call the National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio, brought to you in part by Recovery Centers of America, the nationally recognized leader in drug and alcohol treatment, using proven evidence-based treatment, including 24/7 medically supervised detox, inpatient and outpatient options. You'll receive exceptional care from an expert team of master-level clinicians, physicians, nurses, and staff using 12-step methodology and medications. Jefferson University Hospitals and Thomas Jefferson University, providing excellent clinical and compassionate care in the Philadelphia region. A proven leader in healthcare and education since 1825. And Acadia Healthcare, with locations on the East Coast. Acadia maintains a standard for excellence in the treatment of behavioral health and addiction concerns. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Handler and Mark Sigmund.
Hey, thanks for joining us and welcome to the show. Clean and Sober Radio features real people with real stories about addiction to drugs and alcohol. I'd first like to thank some of the radio stations across America that broadcast our show, and they are WWDB out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, WWNN out of West Palm Beach, Florida, KDWN out of Las Vegas, Nevada, WHFS out of Tampa, Florida, and WGAC out of Augusta, Georgia. On today's show, we're going to be talking with a couple of our old friends of the show, and we're going to be talking about the old days and what that means for the new days. Mark, what do we got going on in this week in recovery news?
We got a lot of news going on. First thing is doctors and companies are pushing to keep looser pandemic-era rules for prescribing opioid addiction treatment via telemedicine. It got a lot easier for patients with opioid addiction to get their medication remotely during the pandemic, and now addiction doctors and telehealth companies are pushing Congress to make those flexibilities permanent.
Well, let me ask you a question. So I get on a telecommunication thing with you. You're the doctor. You don't know what condition I'm in. You don't know what I've really been doing, and you can't really see me to see what condition I'm in.
Yes, there's a lot of truth to that. I think this is geared especially towards those outlying areas where there isn't the accessibility to opioid, addiction drugs to help.
Okay, what else you got?
So the second thing we got is we have a hero on our hands. Palmetto, Florida, dramatic dash cam footage from a Florida Highway Patrol SUV shows the moment a trooper put herself in harm's way in order to protect thousands of runners from a suspected DUI driver who plowed through a series of roadblocks. Florida Highway Patrol said 52-year-old Kristen K. Watts of Sarasota slammed into Master Trooper Tony Shuck's SUV Monday morning, leaving Shuck, 47, with serious injuries after ignoring a series of roadblocks in place for the annual Skyway 10,000.
So let me get this straight. This woman blocked a car to save the lives of other people on that highway?
Yes. Basically, the driver was drunk.
Yeah.
And she went through roadblocks or, went over cones, and she was heading right for this 10,000K with thousands of people running.
Oh, my God.
And the trooper got in front of them with their SUV and is in serious condition right now.
But a hero.
But a total hero.
Yeah. What else you got?
Unbelievable. Experimental brain surgery may help some people overcome addiction. Basically, it's called deep brain stimulation. And the brain of heavy drug users physically changes over time. One change takes place in the nucleus accumbens, which helps regulate the function of a neurotransmitter called dopamine. By placing an electrical probe in the nucleus accumbens, they hope to restore normal function. And they're actually getting some pretty good results with this, with people not having cravings and things like that. Because as we know, addiction is a brain disease.
Okay. I would never do that.
I don't.
Either would you, Mark.
I would only do it if it made me high, I think, back in the
exactly.
day.
Exactly.
I mean, to get something put in your brain.
Yeah.
But, I've seen a little bit of data from this, and you're seeing people are staying clean because it's somehow regulating the dopamine system, which is basically the thing that reinforces addiction.
Wow, that's incredible.
Isn't it? It's, and, you know, we're hearing talk of, you know, at some point, possible vaccines against addiction, which will block the molecules from passing the blood-brain barrier.
And we're also hearing about certain implants that certain companies are using to stop the craving. So, very interesting stuff. Thanks for that. Thanks for that information. Okay, we'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
If you're struggling with alcohol or drugs, Recovery Centers of America can help. RCA's local inpatient and outpatient programs are founded on science and delivered with heart from an expert, caring team who will inspire and guide you every step of the way. Call 1-888-RECOVERY now to speak with a treatment advisor. At RCA, you'll be in a community that builds connections and fosters support from peers and RCA's team of medical professionals and recovery support specialists. At RCA's state-of-the-art campus in Devon, PA and Mays Landing, New Jersey, they tailor your treatment to you and also offer specialized programs for patients with history of trauma, for patients who have achieved recovery but are experiencing a relapse, for young adults, adults 50 years and older, a confidential program for first responders and military, and a faith-based program. RCA answers the phone and accepts patients 24/7. And because it's local and in-network with insurance providers, treatment is affordable and accessible. Don't wait. Call 1-888-RECOVERY. Recovery today.
Hey, this is Lee Rocker from the Stray Cats, and you're listening to Clean and Sober Radio. Rock on, man.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
If you're just joining us now, Mark and I are joined by two friends at the radio station, our show, Mark Willig and Frank Brightman. And we're going to reminisce a little bit about what our lives were like before. And first, let me tell you why this show is important, I believe. Yes, it's going to be light, but also it's going to be an hour to reflect back on our addictions and what went wrong and why we could not change our paths as long as we were in the grips of our addictions. And don't use the excuse, which I used to use all the time, that everybody was doing it. We know now that was certainly not true, because there were plenty of people when we were growing up that were not involved in the activities that we were involved with. Right, Mark?
Yeah, and we surrounded ourselves with people that were doing the activities we were involved with. But it seemed like there was nobody else that wasn't, right?
That's what it seemed like. I mean, when I think, and then we're going to get to our great guest, when I think of the criminal activities, the, you know, cheating to get into law school, crushing cars, burglaries, forging prescriptions, and not really thinking anything of it. And it didn't even cross my twisted mind that this was not how society works.
Yeah,
I just kept going on in that bubble of insanity.
Yeah, and you know, for me, it even started before the drugs and alcohol, just doing insane things that you look back and you're like, why? You know, why? And you know, could have gotten, you know, going to jail for a long time.
Absolutely. You know, I'll tell you something. Our two guests, which, you know, I didn't know either one of them in my addiction, we would have been really great friends.
I think all would have been.
Right? Frank?
We would have been dead, I think.
Probably.
I mean, do you ever reflect on the fact of why you did the ridiculous things that you did? And I'm sure, if, at least for me and maybe for more, it bordered on criminal.
A lot of times it was criminal.
Right.
Thankfully, the statutes have run.
Not out for murder, though, right?
No.
Okay. All right, good.
That's one thing I never did, but I never really reflected on that, quite frankly, because it was just the way it was.
Yeah. So, Mark, how about you? I mean, we grew up near each other, but you said you knew who I was.
Well, you were a kingpin, and I was just a spoke on the wheel.
Kingpin, you know, is not a really good word.
No, well, you were. Were is a good word.
Yeah, okay, were is a good word.
You know, my situation is that I am an addict.
Yes.
If I had a sponsor and a program for every addiction I have, I would have a million sponsors and a million, you know, just because I'm not addicted to drugs and alcohol, it doesn't mean I'm not addicted to anything else, because I am. And Mark was talking about the dopamine, and, you know, my dopamine, when I walk into a supermarket, that's when I get the dopamine, you know. And
you mean the food?
Well, I, you know, like say, I used to cop from people that cop from you. Now I go in the supermarket and I cop from Ben and Jerry.
Okay, okay, you know, I understand.
I hear the voice, 2 for 7. Yo.
You lost the customer.
I lost the guy. And what flavor, is there a certain flavor that you are addicted to?
Yeah, usually like Chubby Hubby or...
Chubby Hubby.
Yeah.
Anything. But you know what? I got to say, look, listen, this whole show, we're going to be laughing.
Yeah.
Okay? But back then, it was not funny.
Oh, no.
You know?
Oh,
no. So, Chubby Hubby?
Yeah, I think that were monkey something. I don't eat Ben and Jerry's anymore. I just...
Well, here's the thing. Ben and Jerry's won't make you rob a bank, crash your car. You know, that, the addictions, I think, are in different levels of what the repercussions can be.
Right.
Only harming yourself with that
exactly,
stuff.
Exactly, exactly. And eating ice cream all the time, harm myself.
Right. Nobody else.
Right.
I mean, you know. Frank, what about you? Did you realize what you were doing to your family? Were they cognizant of what you were doing?
No, not really.
No.
They were cognizant, but I didn't realize it. I think that's a difference. You know, my wife would say, you need help. And I go, no, I'm not an addict, you know. I was telling clients, go to treatment, you know. And here I was doing the same thing that they were doing until it got, I mean, it was sort of thrown in my face. So
anything that you did was really embarrassing, Frank?
Oh, a lot of things I did was embarrassing. Yeah. I mean,
and did you care? Let me ask you, did you care?
I may still have the cobblestones from old Philadelphia embedded in my cheek.
What, from somebody throwing you on the ground or something?
Or no, passing out on the ground, coming back from a bar.
Yeah.
Or a place that I shouldn't have been at. You know, there were, or running through, you know, North Philadelphia, West Philadelphia, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning to try to cop.
God.
You know?
What a burden this addiction was on us. A huge burden. Mark, you're a couple years younger. And by the way, happy birthday, brother.
Thank you.
Very good.
3 years from 50. 1,095 days from 50. I did the math.
And we know you're going to make it now.
Yes, I... You just jinxed me, Gary.
No, I didn't.
Come on,
no,
man.
I didn't.
You just jinxed me.
No, because you're leading a great life and giving back to everybody.
Thank
so
you.
What are the kind of things in your generation did you do?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, where do you start? You know, just stupid stuff. You know, just really, really, really stupid stuff.
Weren't you arrested for, like, jaywalking or something?
No, no. I was arrested for a DUI.
Yeah.
I was under the influence of mushrooms, and I was in New York. And, you know, there was a cop coming the one way, and one of my headlights was out. But in my... you know, tripping mind, I thought to myself, well, if I just put my high beams on, the cop won't pull me over, you know, and that didn't work out so well. You know, he pulled me over and he was really, you know, pretty mad. And there was nothing like eating mushrooms and, you know, tripping with all those lights. You know how they put all the lights on you at night?
Yeah, I never tripped. Frank probably did.
Oh.
Mark, you tripped?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had a...
You were a Quaalude.
I was a connoisseur.
Yes, he was.
Quaalude connoisseur.
Quaalude connoisseur.
Kind of idiot.
Which they were gone by the time of my generation.
Yeah, they were totally gone. So, you know, look, during the show today, you know, I was told by several people, it's not a badge of honor what we did, but it's important to remember what we did. And it's important for people to hear what we did. And it is very possible that you don't have to live like that anymore.
Yeah, and especially if you think of the times when, how blessed we are to still be here. Because I think we all have those stories of, we could have easily been taken out. I mean, you know, even the fire you had down in Florida that Dave woke you up for. I mean, we all have those stories.
Our buddy Dave Sussman, who we miss dearly.
Yes. We all have those close calls, which is pretty scary.
He had great stories.
You know,
he sure did.
You know, listen, if our viewers or listeners are joining us now, we're talking to two buddies, Mark and Frank, about the old days and what we did and what happened to us.
Yeah.
And we're trying to figure out what happened.
Yeah.
Did it happen, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm wondering, did you guys have close calls where, like, you could have been taken out by this thing? You know, either accidents or close calls that way.
Mark, you want to talk or you want me to tell you my close call?
You go first.
I didn't have a close call where I could be taken out. I went sort of nuts. Not sort of nuts, nuts. Because I, you know, when you do a lot of, my drug of choice was cocaine. So when you do a lot of cocaine, the paranoia builds and builds and builds. Mm-hmm. And then I went crazy. And luckily, I was taken by a police officer to a crisis center. So that was my piano on the head. You know, I realized, my story goes that I walked for miles and finally went to a police officer and said, something's got to happen here. And so that was my piano on the head. But I've had a lot of close calls during my addiction. You know, I was stopped by a police officer driving drunk. Thankfully, he only said, like, my taillight was out. You know, you get a warning. And I went, wow, that was close. Or, you know, things like that. But, you know, I didn't realize, and I was a licensed attorney at that time, and I didn't realize that in my addiction, I didn't realize that my license could have been yanked for a lot of years. So, but luckily I kept it. So that was my close call, as close as I could get when the piano came down and I was taken.
But, you know, you just said your license, you could have lost your license and your livelihood. But
in a minute,
that wasn't enough.
No.
To stop you.
Oh, there were times, you know, I was contacted by the FBI and said, hey, we're looking into somebody who I was dealing with. Thankfully, I avoided that. You know, I kept going. Even after that, I said, okay, well, I got away unscathed by that. Yeah. I could keep going. That was the insanity of the addiction.
Yeah, the power of an addiction. People that are not addicted can't understand it. You know, they just can't understand. Mark, what about you?
Well, thank goodness I never got arrested. The only time I've seen an inside of a jail is Bucks County prison when I did hospitals and institutions for my fellowship. And that was very rewarding. And I, you know, I didn't want to be them. I got pulled over with my ex-wife. We weren't married at the time, but we were going down East River Drive, and we were, you know, smoking a doobie, nothing. All of a sudden, the lights. Until this day, I'm still afraid of those lights. And, you know, I wouldn't have anything in the car if this cop stopped me. So the cop stops, and I'm like, she was freaking out because she said, oh, if my parents find out, I'm dead. And he starts walking. It was like a movie. He's like walking up to the car, and then all of a sudden, before he asked me for my license, he gets a call on his walkie-talkie, robbery in progress or something. He said, I got to go. Put it out. That was like the second step story, you know.
Yeah. You know, I'd just like to mention for our viewers and listeners, if you'd like to watch us, either now or, you know, after the show's over, go on Facebook to our page, Clean and Sober Radio, and you can watch how we do the show. And, you know, it's pretty interesting to see these two guys in front of me, especially Mark, who I've known for pretty long now, just, you know, in recovery, and just see what we look like and see how we do the show. And it's just a little, another cherry on top over the content, just to see us. So I just wanted to give that as a sidebar. You know, I can remember, I grew up in the music business in Philadelphia, and there was a lot of money, and that was really a bad place for an addict like me. And, you know, the money just flowed, even, you know, when I was in my teens. But I never considered the fact that you had to do something in life legitimately to make money, like go to work. And but I did realize the thing that scared me was the longer that I didn't work, I was afraid to try to get work. You know, all my friends were passing me by. They were, you know, they had legitimate jobs, good, bad, you know, mediocre. And I'm sitting there in the morning in a chair when the sun comes up and you hear birds chirping and buses going down the street. And if it feels like it was yesterday, and you're just sitting there and going, what am I going to do? Very hopeless, very helpless, you know.
And you had some close calls, you know, the fire.
Yeah, I forgot about that. David Sussman saved me.
Yeah, what was it? You fell asleep
in a hotel room in Miami Beach on Collins Avenue, loaded. Yeah. And I fell asleep, and there was a fire in the hotel room. I had no idea.
And they didn't even know Gary was in there, the firemen and stuff. And David came back and said, you know, my buddy's up there, and was able to get him out.
God, I miss that guy. And yeah. I know that his brother Steven is watching right now. I mean, did you guys have like a group of friends that you did all your bad stuff with, or were you individualists, if that's a word?
Yeah, I had a group of friends. I had a group of friends that supplied me, and a group of friends that wanted some of what I had. That was pretty much the group of friends that I had. You know, towards the end, it was much more solo. So right. I was getting home deliveries, office deliveries, you know, things like that.
This is before, what's the delivery service now?
Before Uber.
Before Uber, yeah. And before
Uber
Eats. Who delivers all the stuff? I can't believe, I can't remember.
Amazon.
Before Amazon, right?
Yeah.
Amazon would have been fabulous back then, wouldn't it?
Fabulous.
Fabulous. Would have been absolutely fabulous. Hey, listen, if you need help, call us now, 1-888-329-3306. That's 1-888-329-3306. And also, call the Substance Abuse Mental Health Line at 1-800-662-HELP. And somebody will answer the phone. Or you want to call in to us, producer will take your name and number, and we will direct you in the right direction, you know. So, crazy times, right?
Crazy times, and we're all sitting here.
Yeah, that's an
amazing
thing.
Still walking, but a lot of people aren't. That's the sad part about it, you know?
Did we ever hang out together at all, Mark?
I hung out with your girlfriend a long time.
Which one was that? Just give me your first name.
M.
Oh, yes. I hung out with her, too, for a long time.
But
not my current wife.
Well, no.
Yeah.
Her boyfriend.
I know exactly who he's talking.
Her boyfriend.
I thought I was her boyfriend.
No. Before you.
Oh, yeah.
Right. BG was a member of my band. So
right.
She used to come to gigs all the time. And that's how I knew her. And, you know, the friends I had, thank God, they're still my friends. And they kind of stayed away from me because they grew up. I didn't. And then my drug was loneliness. And I just, because nobody would get high with me. I haven't found anybody to get high with me. So I was just lonely, and somebody gave me a suggestion to go to a meeting, and here I am,
okay.
24 years ago.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're with our dear friends. We're going to continue the conversation regarding what it was like when we were out there on the street. And don't go away, we'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Huntington Creek Recovery Center is Eastern Pennsylvania's premier provider of transformative care for individuals whose lives have been impacted by addiction. Our 40-acre campus offers a tranquil, recovery-focused environment. We specialize in evidence-based care that addresses the effects of trauma and offer a unique program specifically for adolescent males. Huntington Creek Recovery Center can help you achieve lasting sobriety. Call us today at 844-948-2222. 2320.
Hi, everybody. This is Tommy James, and you're listening to Gary Hendler on Clean and Sober Radio.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, we're back. Clean and Sober Radio. And we have a caller on the line.
Yes, we do.
Caller, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear us?
Honey?
Us?
Are you two?
Oh, it's your wife and
it's
your
my
son.
Wife.
Hi,
yes.
Guys.
Hi, Andrew.
Thank you. What are you guys
Happy
up to?
Birthday. We are just listening to the show and waiting for you to come home to celebrate your birthday.
That's great.
Awesome.
Good, good, good. Well, we had a little celebration for Mark when he got here, very little. And I'm sure he's excited to get home and have a real celebration.
Absolutely. They had a candle, cream puffs. I walked in and I was like, what is going on? The studio was dark and there was a candle lit. It was very nice.
Good.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks, honey.
Of course. All right. See you guys soon. Take care.
Take care.
See you. Bye-bye.
Oh, that's sweet.
That was really nice.
That's sweet. Let's just run through. Let's do a roll call. Debbie Reynolds, Laura Story, Stephen Sussman from Florida, Claire Keller, Alan Trobman.
Hello, Alan.
Hey, Alan. Hello, Mark and Gary. This is from Laura Story. I hope you had a great week. Fridays are the best day of the week because of Clean and Sober Radio. Wow.
That's awesome.
Betsy Kalish, Warren Crispell, Bob Moeller, Tom Abenizio, Betsy Green. Hey, guys. Frank, it's so good to see you. I love this show. It keeps it green for me. Kevin Gleason.
Oh, our old Kevin. He says, go fly a kite.
There you go. There you go. Okay, let's see. I don't want to miss anybody. Michael Siberio, Kathy Wolf Collin. Boy, we got a lot of... Rob McGregor. I will get to Monica McNally.
Pokorny. Oh, gosh.
Oh, come on now.
Pokorny, I think you're right.
I think I'm right.
Pretty sure you're right.
Right, Monica? All right, let's get back to the show.
How long is it going to take
us? Why can't we get
this? I don't know. We've been trying to get Monica's name right for like 3.5 years.
I mean, I butcher every name, but and Mark usually gets it, but we don't know if it's...
Us?
Porcorny or Poker... I can't even say it.
Yeah.
She's a great lady, though. Anyway. So how about... What do we do? How do we really ruin our families? How about all the stuff that we put on them? For me, at least, I didn't care.
I am a certified family recovery specialist.
Right.
And it's a family disease, and a lot of people will just not agree with me. And shout out to Tommy Abenizio. Yo, Tommy.
nice.
Yeah, he's a great friend, man.
ADD.
I don't really miss the days, but I know that it impacted my family, other families, friends that have families, my addiction, because I was, you know, all my friends from Overbrook Park happened to move like to Juniper Road. So that's where I hung out on Juniper Road. And I used with all those guys and everything. And then one became a lawyer. One became something in real estate.
And there were also some bad dudes on that street.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But the thing is... I know that it's 4 out of 5 families go through this, and the worst thing in the world is for a parent to be sitting up at night not knowing where your kid is and waiting for that phone call. It's horrifying.
I've done it. I do know what you're saying. It is horrifying. But why didn't we care? You know, when the tables are turned and you have a kid— It's different, for sure, than we were giving it to our parents. You know, my parents used to take the phone off the hook every single night because police were calling.
Yeah, but the thing is, the drugs back then are not like the drugs now.
Yeah.
I mean, I missed the whole crack generation, and you know, I missed the whole fentanyl thing. And, yeah. and you know, I think that if I took Quaaludes that were laced with fentanyl, I would be dead. So, you know, they didn't really talk about the drug abuse as much as they do now.
Yeah. Listen, we have another caller. I'd like to get to Steve Sussman, David's brother. Yeah. And we love the support that he gives us, and we loved his brother. Steven, are you there?
Hey, Steven.
Yes, can you hear me?
I certainly can.
Terrific. I have a little bit of a feedback, but I'll deal with it.
Okay.
So I wanted to, first of all, I wanted to thank you guys for what you do. And I never really listened to the show until David passed. Mm-hmm. Except for the one time you had the two of us on the show.
Right.
That was a great
show.
For
those who don't know, I'm David's twin brother, and we took different paths in life.
Completely.
Yeah. I think we at the end, we came together. But there were one of you two, I can't remember which one earlier in the show today, mentioned that life before drugs. And I can give, I think, Gary, you know David, from the addiction years, you know, I didn't know about the Florida fire and all that sort of thing, but I can add perspective from before, where I believe before David started doing drugs. Mm-hmm. So when we were in, there are two short stories. When we were in high school, I was very active in USY, at the synagogue, all the Jewish groups. David did nothing. And whenever I tried to engage him in the Jewish community, in the Jewish youth group, he would poo-poo. And you may have been around him, Gary. I'm not, you know, hanging out with him. But I would try to get him to come to Jewish parties at USY and all that sort of thing. He would never do it. And he just looked down at me for doing those sorts of things because he was more engaged in hanging out with
low lifes, you know, like me, right?
So that was one, that to me may have been a hint on the direction David was taking in life. The other one was actually something you may not know about, Gary. When David and I, when we were in 11th grade, we spent the summer in Israel, 8 weeks, with a local rabbi. And in a series of circumstances, in front of David was so bad, in front of everybody, and this was 1971, the rabbi said to David, as far as I'm concerned, you're off this tip. You're not part of the tip. I'm responsible for you, so you're going to be with us. But I don't consider you part of this tip. And that's how much of a wild guy he was in Israel. Again, that was another hint to me of, in retrospect, of David taking a different route. And he would disappear from the group. He would find whatever he would find in the evening and disappear, and maybe go to a club in Israel, and the rabbi caught wind of it and threw him off the trip.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think in retrospect, if I had thought about it, if I had, if I was as wise then as I might be now, maybe I could have helped him. So those are a couple of stories.
Well, Stephen, thank you for some of the insights into David. I guess none of us really know why we took the path of addiction. I mean, really know why. It's really an unknown.
And there was no way to stop him, right,
David?
Or to stop us. Yeah, until he hit some kind of bottom or something like that. You know, a lot of loved ones look back and they're like, maybe I could have saved them.
But, Mark, I got to say this, that, you know, a lot of the time during addiction was a lot of fun. Until it wasn't,
Gary?
Fun.
Yeah.
You know?
Can I say one more thing?
Sure, Steve.
Yeah. What you just said was interesting. David, if you know David, was in and out of recovery as many people are. One time, David told me that he enjoyed going into recovery because the high that he got when he got out was so much better.
Right. Yeah. Understood. I totally understand that. Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, interesting.
All right.
Interesting stuff. Stephen, thanks so much for calling. I knew you were going to call, and we talked about it, you and I, this week. And I just I appreciate how we've become close over the years. Unfortunately, not at the expense of David, but Let me just put this way. I'm glad we're buddies. Okay? That's what I want to say.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Stephen. Have a great weekend.
See you, Stephen.
Yeah. Bye-bye. See, that's an amazing story. We don't know why we got this. And there's Stephen and David, twins.
Yeah.
Totally different paths.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Stephen, I don't even believe he used anything.
No.
You know? And David, yeah, and that's like, you know, as twins, you would think with the genetic predisposition.
And they grew up in the same house, yes. Obviously.
Yeah.
You know, Mark, you have siblings?
Yes.
Any issues?
Well, no, my brother's doing okay, but my father was a gambler, yeah. Which is a bad addiction,
yeah.
Which is why I never lived on Juniper Road. I lived in the row house.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, my mother was just addicted to, codependency. So, and there's other members of my family that, were into things. But, you know, addiction is addiction. And, I even, like we were saying before, when I see flashing lights, you know, it's like my dopamine senses, like, yo, that's so cool. And, you know, if I'm walking into a casino and I hear the bells and da, 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 my dopamine kicks in. Whoa, that's cool. I'm at a concert. Of course, not using. I mean, I used to go to concerts and have seats right on the floor. But I mean on the floor because I couldn't, you know, stay straight for the concert. So I would end up like
on the floor.
So that doesn't happen anymore. Thank goodness.
And you go to a lot of concerts.
I have not at the ticket prices. No, but yeah, I have a connection. So,
Frank, what is the worst thing that you did?
Wow.
No, that's a right, that's
Frank,
a loaded question right there.
What are the 20 worst things that you did, Frank?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's a hard question. That's a ridiculous question.
I mean.
I can tell you that in terms of my mind,
yeah,
a lot of, like I say, coke and doing a lot of it, okay, gets you, there's not too much to do at 3:00 in the morning. Mm. And I just remember like just licking bags and doing weird, you know, disgusting stuff to get coke, mm-hmm. You know. Disgusting, not like out of the room disgusting,
yeah.
But, you know, it's just horrible, you know, for just that one couple lines of coke.
How about doing something that was belittling to you because you needed the drugs, because we do almost anything? Was there something you did that was like, I can't believe I lowered myself to that?
Okay, so a guy... I think I told you this story. So a guy comes over to my house. He's got a big bag of coke. And he opens the bag and coke goes everywhere. And we have hardwood floors in my home. So I'm sitting there with a credit card cleaning, like down on my knees, hands and knees, cleaning the coke off the floor with the dust and the dirt. And my wife walks in.
Oh,
she sees me sitting on the floor with this credit card pushing it into like cleaning. She goes, what are you doing? I go, oh, nothing. You know, that was, you know, how bizarre it was, because I didn't want to admit that I had a problem. And she knew what was going on.
Sure.
But
yeah. Mark, how about you?
You know, the worst thing that happened to me is that I was on angel dust, and my mother decided that she was going to 302 me. And back then it was Philadelphia Psychiatric.
Yeah, 302, for our listeners and viewers, 302 means an involuntary commitment to a psychiatric facility.
Right, right. So I woke up in the actual padded room with the straitjacket on, and for the next couple weeks, I was on lithium and, you know, all the psych meds. And did the little shuffle there, And it was just an embarrassing time for me because I had to cancel gigs because I was with the band at the time. And it was just embarrassing. Just embarrassing.
Belittling, embarrassing.
Yeah, yeah. My mother loved to belittle me, but, you know, yeah. God bless her.
I used to go to family events, and they would, there were a lot of professional people in my family, and they would like sort of like tap me on the shoulder, hey, what's Gary doing now? You know, like low life. That really stuck in my head. You know, I just want to bring up something real quick. Bernard mentioned that we should also mention, we've been talking about David Sussman. David was clean and sober for years before he left us, and we should definitely mention that. You know, I just want to mention that. Mark, what about you? Belittling, embarrassing.
So, I think, you know, when I look back at it, some of my biggest regrets were fights. I mean, when I drank, for some reason, you know, and I'm a peaceful guy, you know, for some reason, like if I had enough to drink and I was at a bar, I would end up in like these fights, sometimes with people I knew, you know? And so when I look back, I'm like, oh man, like that was not me.
Were they girls or guys?
They were guys.
They were guys.
Thankfully.
Because okay, you're a big guy, right? Mark.
Yeah, I am a big guy. And, you know, I would get hurt sometimes too. I mean, it was, you know, pretty bad. So, you know, but that's when I look back, that's probably some of my biggest regrets, you know, all kinds of embarrassing stuff. But we could save those tales for another day, I think.
I find that some of the embarrassing stuff for me was, you know, I wasn't like you guys. I wasn't as lucky. I got arrested many times, and I would, you know, at different stations in this area, and they would shackle your ankles together, and I would always think to myself, God, I grew up in a really nice family. How did it go from that to this? I never had the answer. I still don't have the answer.
And what an amazing story of, you know, going from all of this to getting pardoned, right, by the president, you know? I mean, that's why that had to feel so good.
That's a reward of sobriety.
Yes. Never thought it would happen.
No. Yeah, never thought it would happen, but it did. It did. It absolutely did. You love bringing that up, don't you?
I do, because it was, I just was so shocked.
It was shocking.
You were shocked.
It was shocking.
It was very shocking.
Oh, yeah. I thought everybody got a presidential pardon. No?
Yeah.
When he told me in the morning when it was, I was like, yeah, come on, Gary. And then I read the articles, and it was pretty shocking.
And especially given the atmosphere of who gave it to him.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I appreciate him for doing that for me. You know that? So, all right, look, you know, Let's talk more. If you want to, you know, somebody said, Bill Stolfer from Pro A said, oh, it's going to be, what did he say was the word? Some kind of stories for the whole show.
War stories.
We're not trying to promote bad behavior. We're just trying to show bad behavior and that we can overcome the behavior. Right, Frankie?
If you take the drugs and alcohol out of it, there were good times, you know. It was, I grew up in the disco era, you know, when we were going, you know, we'd go out clubbing. It was just, when you overlay the drugs on top of that, that's when it gets a little crazy, you know. Mm-hmm. I had friends then that don't talk to me now, that when I wasn't in the throes, the real throes of my addiction, we had great times. You know, we would go out and have a couple drinks, have a couple lines maybe, and, you know, dance, go to bars, restaurants, and that was great. It was only the ramping up that made life unmanageable that then it started to be destroyed, the life.
Yeah.
You know?
I do know. You know, listen, let's do this. When we come back, I'd like to find out from our guest, Mark, did you have friends that were not involved in your addiction or your criminal activity? And we'll get to some of the answers to that question when we come right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
Hey, this is Mark Stein from Vanilla Fudge, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
I asked a question before we went to break. Did you guys have friends who were not involved in addiction and criminal activities? Mark?
No.
That's honest. That's honest. Yeah. Frank?
My best friend from eighth grade wasn't involved, is not an alcoholic. And I went to a wedding, his wedding.
High as
anything.
Yeah.
And to this day, I can't look at the wedding pictures because it's like, you know, I look like I just, you know, fell off the addiction truck.
Did he ever say anything to you? Not that it would matter, but...
It was interesting because his parents passed away.
Yeah.
And they had a memorial service. And people were coming up to... He knew yeah. I was feeling bad. And you know, he knows that I'm clean and sober and up for a long time.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because people came up to me who were at the wedding. This is sort of sad, but people came up to me at the memorial service and said, gee, you've changed. What's going on? You know, you don't look like the last time I saw you was at his wedding.
Busted.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, they couldn't believe that I was the same person, which was sort of a little weird for me, but.
Yeah. Mark, you were going to bring something up.
Well, I was going to bring something up that Bill Stouffer said that about
Bill is the executive director of Pennsylvania Recovery Organization Alliance. Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, if just because you're clean for a long time or sober for a long time doesn't mean that you haven't developed problems from using. Like my scar tissue, my kidneys are gone, and you know, and once you're clean, these things happen, and you can't blame the drugs, but you can blame the drugs because our bodies deteriorate, and they don't get better when we stop. You know, our brains might get better, but our physical being won't get any better unless they go to the gym, and the only gym I know is Gym Steaks. Yeah. So.
Listen, you're 100% right. I forget who I was talking to about this. I'm assuming I ingested thousands of Quaaludes. It had to do something to my body, and that's why I probably have some minor problems, but you can't get away from this. You know, you do enough. It has to. Putting those chemicals and all that crap in your body, you do pay for it.
Yeah, I am constantly reminded every time I go to a doctor's appointment. And really, what I like, I mean, I'm 65, and I would really like to give back and just sit on a committee or you know, help like Matt Weintraub, because I live in Bucks County.
Oh, he's
and
your guy.
He is the man. Yeah. But, you know, it's getting ridiculous, you know. Other things come in the news. Listen, war is important, but we still have not come close to beating this.
Oh, it's worse than ever.
Yep.
Isn't it, Mark? Is it worse?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the game changer has been the fentanyl and the synthetics. And, yeah, I would absolutely say it's worse than ever, which is kind of disheartening. You know?
If we were, let me ask each of you, if we were out there now using, what would be our drug of choice? Frank, still Coke?
Yeah.
Mark?
I would say good old 714s.
But they're not around.
Oh, if they were around. Oh,
now.
I don't know more, because that,
that's
everything.
A good
I never. Nobody ever passed me a joint, and I said, "Nah, that's all right. I don't need it." Never happened. I used to have roach contests with my friend, and see who could smoke to the tiniest little bit of roach. He would lick his fingers so he wouldn't get burned. I mean, crazy stuff.
Sick. It's Mark, what would be your drug of choice now?
I think I would be living at one of the new dispensaries in New Jersey, like right out front.
You'd be living there.
Living there. And, you know, shrooms and LSD and...
Man, yeah.
Yeah.
Deadhead drugs.
Deadhead drugs. How about you? Well, Quaaludes are gone.
Yeah, they're gone.
Well, so, they're not exactly completely gone, right? I mean,
I guess there's some downers that have some, or those drugs called mandrakes.
In Europe.
In Europe.
Yeah.
What would be my drug of choice?
Booze.
No, I never drank. I would. It was some kind of downer. I don't know. You know, something that didn't make you itch.
Acid and mushrooms are like, you need a few days.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
What do you mean, to enjoy them?
In between. Yeah, in between. Yeah. And it takes a couple of days to trip.
Yeah. Listen, if you're just joining us, we're having an hour-long discussion of what it was like in the old days and how grateful we are that we have been in recovery for around this table is almost 100 years.
Well, and you know what's crazy? I actually, I don't know if I should have done this, but I was just out of curiosity, and I just turned 47. So I multiplied 47 times 365, and it was like, I've been alive like 17,000 something.
What year did you, were you born?
1975. But then I was thinking about how, you know, when you're doing something every day, you know, how much we put our bodies through, and it's actually quite a miracle that like they still function, you know.
Yeah.
You've been here like 100,000 days, right?
What are you saying?
Nothing. I just
wait. I've been
just
here.
Saying,
wait,
I'm 17,000.
Oh, you're saying how many years I've been alive?
How many days?
How many days? Well, what's 50 times 365?
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Sure.
Yeah, let me do an estimate here. How many days you've been here?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But you know, it's interesting. We're
sitting. Can your phone go?
We
that
just
high?
Don't know why.
Yeah. And you know, the funny thing is, between the four of us, we know so many people.
Yeah.
And if we did a sixth degree of separation.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, what the great thing is that most of the people that we know are in recovery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially you, Mark. Mark knows everybody.
I know. Mark knows everybody.
Everybody that comes in, we're like, you know Mark Willig? They're like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good, right?
That's a good thing, yeah. That's a good thing.
Yeah. That's
man. Doesn't he knows everybody?
I know he does. I
appreciate all the support I get from my friends. You know, they were with me at my rock bottom, and they never lost faith in me. So if you guys are listening, I love you.
Let's talk about that. That's a good subject. All the people now that have supported us, and there's some that still won't, still remember, whatever, but all the people that have supported us, even if they're not in recovery and don't really understand what addiction means, they're able to sympathize or whatever, and understand what we went through and are able to support us in our journey. That's pretty special, you know?
Yeah, I've never had, when I tell people that I'm in recovery, it's always congratulations.
Yeah,
you know? I've never had anybody say, like, oh, that's bad, or what's going on, you know? When you go to a doctor or a dentist, you have to say you're in recovery because you don't want the Percocets and everything else that they'll prescribe.
Well, Frank, when you got sober, did you have people who got away from you, or you got away from them?
One person I recollect is I went to her wedding. We were very close friends when I was, and I know that we got together with a group of people, and I would I got real high and I drove at night with sunglasses on, you know, it was, and Lord knows what I did when we got to her house. But to this day, she refuses to talk to me. Although I've known people that know her and said, tell her I'm in recovery, long-term recovery. She absolutely refuses to talk to me.
That's her loss. Listen, we're coming up to the hour. First, I want to ask you, Mark, is there any quick last words of advice for somebody who's thinking about getting into recovery?
Well, I don't give advice. I only share experience. And my experience is working in recovery that if you really want to change your life for the better and not be paranoid and have people love you for who you are, just make that call.
Thank you very much. Frank, how about you?
You know, we talk about the promises in recovery, and I got to say that since I've been in recovery, the promises have come true, you know. Everything that I hoped I would do has come true.
That's beautiful. It is beautiful, right? Happy birthday, big guy.
Thank you, Gary. Thanks for the party.
Listen, remember, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, help is available. Please call 1-800-662-HELP. For Clean and Sober Radio, I'm Gary Hendler.
I'm Mark Sigmund.
Thanks for listening. To learn more about this broadcast, please join us on our mission at cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com. Have a great weekend, everybody. Who brings the dust away?
To say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.